Post-Harlan Monologics. Number 00059. Recorded on August 17, 2023. Production location, Post. Harlan. Texas. Freeform Fuck Circle of the Second Hell. Chapter 59.
The opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88.
Post-Harlan Monologics is a monologue format audio podcast. It is what has become known in the common era as infotainment, which is to say the content is both informative and entertaining. The premise of Post-Harlan Monologics is a description of conditions in the 21st century AD. From a DFW perspective by an aging building maintenance guy. That is me, Maverick 88. I cover odd shit from my weird neighborhood, product reviews, Texas things, holy scripture, and the culture war. Warning, I am Texan by choice, but I was raised in New Jersey, so take cover. There will be F-bombs. For more information, please visit www.post-arlen.com. All right, let's do this now.
In the neighborhood. News from the home front.
I tell you, this week I had, I guess you'd call it a red letter day on the calendar of my life, right? Not like a big thing. I didn't get a promotion or come to Jesus or anything like that. I just had a day that so many fairly significant things happened all on the same day that life has to be different out on the other side of it somehow, right? All on one day, right? I think of it as the quote-unquote Big Tuesday. I had the remaining elm tree, right? The other elm tree. I had the elm tree from hell last fall, but then the other elm tree from the second hell, still standing in the backyard, teetering precariously. It grew wonky. It looks like the a tree from the forest that Home Depot gets its 2x4s from, right? big fucking curve in the trunk where it don't belong. Then the extension piece growing out the top. It starts up straight again, then curves also. And it's all curving out over my neighbor's yard. So when this thing falls, the weight of it all is just going to go out, bust a fence between our yards, and then land on her outbuilding. She's got a very nice tool shed back there, right? Old lady next door, right? Old hippie woman. And, you know, her life is basically keeping her yard, and she keeps a nice little yard. It's a little garden, little park. And here I got this ominous tree that it looks like it should be growing in the middle of a fucking graveyard. And it's like hanging out over her world, just waiting to come down and destroy shit, right? And it's been weighing on me ever since Elm Tree from Hell number one, right? The Elm Tree from the first hell split and then re-split and dropped branches and broke my fucking shed. And finally, I had to pay on top of that, right? I had to get out with the chainsaw, cut all this wood, carry everything, the trunk and all across the fucking yard, stack it all up, get it out of the way, and then pay somebody $1,200 to come and take the rest of it down. That's how big this fucking thing was, right? Or this little sister tree, you know, the elm tree from the second hell, was like the runt little twin. It was maybe 3/4 the size. It cost $850 to have somebody come and cut it down. And Tuesday, big Tuesday, was the day that happened, right? And I wanted to get it done this summer before the season of storms resumes, right? We have storm season number one, which you will regard as spring, more than likely where you live. And then we have storm season number two in the year, which is the autumn where you live, right? These are transitional periods between summer and winter in Texas and everywhere else. But really all it is here, the big difference is maybe 20 degree drop in temperature and a whole lot of hail and thunderstorms coming through, lots of wind, and this is where that tree is going to fall the fuck over, right? So got to get it out of there before then. It's been weighing on me. It's been bothering me. You know, when I got the first elm tree cut down, I had the guy come out, look at it, give me an estimate, and we set a date. Right, we set a date for him to come out and do the job. And between the estimate and the time he came out is when all these huge branches started falling out of the top of the tree, one of which crushed my fucking shed, right? One of my two sheds. Just destroyed, crushed. I was on the ball. I was getting it done. I was proactive. I was out ahead of it. And nonetheless, right, by the time the guy showed up, literally like 2-3 days before he showed up, destruction happened. And this is, I made these arrangements last week with the guy for this Tuesday. I wasn't at work this Tuesday because another reason, right? Another big reason, eye surgery for my wife, right? I told you about that 2 weeks ago or so, two episodes back. They do one eye at a time, I think for obvious reasons. Not so obvious to some people, but it is, to me, an obvious reason, right? You got one eye that's been worked on, so if you do two eyes and you got a person who's got eye patches on their face for a day or two, can't see, right? You do one eye at a time. Another thing is it reduces the chance of infection, right? With surgery and everything like that. To me, it's obvious, but to some people, not so obvious. You have to go back for a second round for the second eye. Tuesday was that day. That's why I had the tree guy come out, because I took the day off so I could take my wife over to the eye surgeon and get the shit done, right? So that got done. The tree got done. And I made a big purchase, right? For me, a big purchase is anything like $500 and up. But this is more than... This was... In the end, $1,700. I bought a laptop computer. For a minute there, it was going to be a special rifle, right? A precision long-distance rifle. I had it all on Sunday. I had it all shopped out, and I had all the accessories all shopped out. Everything was figured. Everything was ready to go. All I had to do was click two fucking buttons, right? I held off on it till Monday morning. Monday morning when I woke up, right? Because I give myself a day to, like, second-guess myself. And I don't know what happened. I got up Monday morning, I made my coffee, and I moseyed over to my computer. And when I took one look at my computer, it suddenly occurred to me. It's like, you know what? I got this kind of kick-around money right now because this was the computer that I didn't buy last fall because these problems with the trees and shit that was going on, right? I didn't want to just start dumping big chunks of money all at once. So I never got the computer. Right, but the computer was already accounted for, budgeted for, and I forgot about it while I was looking into getting a gun that I frankly, you know, it's a kind of a hole in my arsenal. I don't have that long-distance precision weapon, but I don't know when I would ever need it. The lay of the land as it is, and you know, and additional expense would come with it, then I'd have to go and get, you know, dies for reloading and buy brass and components and shit, you know, all that. And then I'd have to get range time, right? Where the hell am I going to shoot a gun? You know, a gun that's capable of easily hitting, target 3 inches around from 1,000 fucking meters, right? It's that kind of gun. Where am I going to get 1,000 meters from to shoot? I got to go to these special ranges. They have them around in Texas, right? They do. You drive out a little bit, but they're here, but you got to pay. But I remembered Monday morning. I've learned myself enough in my life. When it comes to a big expense, give it an extra day before you push that submit button. And somehow it came to me, you know, that the more important purchase would be this laptop. I'm not buying this laptop frivolously. It's the work that I do. I got this fucking work-a-day job, and I'm hating it more and more every day, by the way, in case you were wondering. And I'm feeling the urge to, like, go do something different a lot lately. Change of scenery, even the same job, just somewhere the fuck else. Just, I got to walk away from this soon. It's getting to me. I'm done. I'm just done with it. It's 7.5 years of this shit. It's plenty, right? It's plenty. All beside the point, the laptop is the work I do otherwise, right? I'm a very creative person. I got a lot of hobbies, a lot of interests. I get these things going on. Obviously, I have this podcast. With the podcast comes a website. So all the computer work, managing these files, getting them out onto the World Wide Web, all the graphics that are related with it, all the post-production stuff, it's all done on a computer. And that's just one aspect of my interests and hobbies where it comes to the PC world, right? Again, I've been very much involved with writing this book relative to the apocalypse, right? The Book of Revelation and things that are coming with that. It's morphing. It may not be about the Book of Revelation by the time it's all said and done. It'll involve that. But I think it's starting to develop into a larger subject matter, something really more important, something really more impressive. But again, that's something to talk about at another time, not here in the neighborhood section, right? In the neighborhood was this big Tuesday. Last elm tree is down. Eye surgery is done. And I got this laptop coming, right? This very expensive laptop. And there'll be more about that in the future, too. I ordered it specially online from a company in Denver called System 76, who specializes in Linux-based systems. That's why I went that way. I've been using Ubuntu, if you are a fan and you follow my early episodes, and had one with the title Ubuntu, where I just had loaded it up. It's an operating system. It's a variant, a distribution of Linux. And it's my first taste of the Linux world. And it was a big deal at the time, getting away from fucking Bill Gates and Microsoft and all that shit, right? Free operating system. Works great. I love it. And I want to stay with that, right? And trying to find somewhere to order a computer from, buy a computer from, even in person, like Best Buy or whatever electronic store of your choice. It's all a Microsoft world, right? It just is. It is. You think there's geeks enough around that they might even have just a little aisle that have a couple of computers that aren't fucking Microsoft ridden. But no. So found a specialist company, System 76 in Denver, that does this. And I got, it's not their top of the line PC. Not their top of the line. It's a laptop. It's the build that I selected and components that I requested brought the bill up to about $1,500, and then it was $1,700 with taxes and shipping and all that shit, right? If I could have found a place to buy it, I could have got probably the next step up, you know, that extra $200. Well, taxes I still had to pay anyway, so probably not. It don't matter. But I'd have got the same computer for $100 less or more, you know, $150 less if I could have bought it locally. Well, no, $50 less. Forget about it. I'm not doing the fucking math right now. I'm messing it all up. So all that. See, now with the Elm Tree gone goes the worries, right? And with the Elm Tree gone, now I got to work on getting rid of stumps. Now I can start thinking about putting up a fence in the backyard without having to worry of a tree falling over and breaking it, right? I don't want to build a fence and have a tree fucking fall over on it, right? So now I'm open up to begin to develop the backyard. Chicken coop, the fence, more outbuildings, you know, something special to put the bikes in. We got a four-wheeler that needs to be worked on, and it really needs its own space. These things can now start to happen. If I want the garden still, after those things happen, now I can put a garden down. I don't want to fucking plant a garden where a tree's going to fall on it, right? Branches are going to drop on and break everything all the time. That's what I've been dealing with. That's what I've been looking at, right? So life is different with the elm trees, both of them, gone. There's only two trees left on our yard. We got this massive catalpa tree, which is the shade tree of the house, which seems to be healthy. It doesn't drop branches. It has withstood every storm that has come through without any fucking problems for the past 50 or 60 years, right? I don't like its proximity to the house, but it brings nice shade for the patio that I'm going to put in the backyard eventually also, right? Or deck or combination of the two. Something's going to happen back there. So we've got a good shade tree over that area. And you know, as long as it doesn't get uprooted or stricken by fucking lightning or something, it shouldn't do any harm to the house, right? So it's going to stay, and we'll take our chances with that. But that's it. Other than the tree that I just planted in the front yard, which is a tiny, right now it's a sapling. It's going to grow at its max to like 20 feet high, 20 feet around. It's, you know, it's never going to be that big of a tree. And the day I don't like it, you just cut it the fuck down and start again. It'll never, you know, it'll never have like a root system so crazy. It'll never have a trunk so thick, and it'll never grow so tall that you can't just manage it yourself. That's the kind of trees your city neighborhoods need, right? So I'm probably going to put up crepe myrtles and or peach trees in the backyard. I haven't decided yet, right? Just a line of them along the fence when the fence goes up. And yeah, I got plans. But now those plans can start to happen once that godforsaken tree is gone, and it's gone, right? But my wife in the eye surgery, she's had problems with her eyes ever since I've known her and long before that. And now those are being resolved, right? She can actually see better than me, probably. I don't see all that great. I don't require glasses, but I could use them, right? And that changes life for her. And a lot of good, no more contact lenses, all that shit, right? It's all gone. It simplifies her life. It probably leaves some extra money in our budget for other things to do. And she'll be changed. She's going through a year of positive change herself, you know, in a lot of ways. But life is going to be different for her. And I'm as one with her. She's my wife under God, you know, the proximity. You know, what changes for her changes for me as well, right? And then obviously this laptop coming in. This is it. This is probably the last computer I ever buy. This is the one I go to my grave with. You know, as long as the motherboard doesn't fry up on it, this is probably it, right? Now, I have another laptop that I bought in 2006. It was a bottom shelf piece of crap. It was a Gateway. And the cheapest one I could find at the time, it's still running Windows XP on it. You know, that's how old it is. And it still works. And it never didn't work. A laptop can be functional for a long time. I got two desktops that are old. I've talked about this before. One of them was refurbished in like 2010, and I've had it since then, since shortly after that, maybe 2011 forward. I've had that computer, and it still rolls. That's my primary business application and creativity computer. And then, of course, I've got the Dell that I purchased, the most expensive computer I ever bought, which was top of the line back in 2004. I got it for $2,000, right? It still goes to this day. And it's incurred many upgrades. I've maxed it out, you know, the maximum RAM that the motherboard will take, the maximum video card that it'll use, all, everything is just maxed on that. It's not up to spec for the modern era, but it's still works. It's got Windows Vista on it right now. I'm keeping that one because it's set up for recording music, right? The MIDI input for musical recordings I do, it's all set up for that, and that's the only purpose that thing serves in life right now. All right, so I don't really use it. It's not even on currently because I am not composing music currently. This laptop will ultimately do everything. And it'll also be like the TV me and my wife use. Instead of looking at our smartphones to watch movies and shit like we've been doing, which is making me go blind, we'll have a 17-inch laptop, you know, a 17-inch monitor on it. And it will absolutely suffice for all that kind of shit. Now, there's some things I didn't even check in the specs now that I think about it. Does it have a DVD drive? You're going to assume it does, but in this day, I don't know. Maybe it don't. I would hope it does. I'd probably have to get an external one if it don't, just to play some of the movies that I have, shit like that. But anyway, so there we go. I had that big Tuesday, right? And it's funny, in the neighborhood, right? Why is this in the neighborhood? Because anything that happens in that neighborhood, see, my street, we got a lot of old timers, a lot of retirees, right? The family, right? We got my in-laws are over there and on the block, you know, die catty corner to us across the street. And but then there's a whole bunch of other, like my neighbor next door, old person, right? Old woman lives there. And we have old people up and down the block. We got some on the block behind us. Whenever something happens in the neighborhood, right, these people all come out and ooh and ah about it. It's kind of funny, right? And the tree was high enough, and it's in the middle of the neighborhood. Everybody could just sit in their fucking driveway and watch. And you see these people out there. You know, one guy, a Mexican dude across the street, he's actually the father of the guy with the loud fucking Mustang that we, everybody on the street hates so much, right? But he himself, he's not such a bad dude. And he always comes over. If he sees something going on in my house, he's always got to come and check out what's going on. If I'm out front doing digging and shit like that, he's coming out checking on it. So he was over, you know, he's over and he's talking to me. And got these guys up in the tree way up there, and you know, people sitting in their driveways. Some people coming up and seeing if they can get estimates on the trees that they need cut. But it becomes like this whole to-do, you know? It's like, here's the event of the fucking season, right? The tree getting cut down. You know, old-timers, retirees got nothing better else to do, nothing better else to focus on. And it becomes like this big deal. It's kind of funny to me, right? And I wasn't really aware of it. I was like, while this is going on, I'm at my work. I'm at the computer, and I'm, you know, working on my book and shit like that, and you know, focused deeply on the faith and kind of minding everything, but not really paying it any attention at the same time, if you can understand that. But my wife was home, and she would come in and tell me, oh, old bastard from behind us, he's over there talking to them, you know. And this guy's out front just hanging around on our fence watching what's going on, and the in-laws across the street, they're sitting in the driveway, and then the other one's down there, you know. So she's telling me about it all. It's just funny, you know, it's just funny. The neighborhood ain't all bad, but we do have these old-timers that kind of get busybody-ish, some of them at least, about anything that's going on. Now, that turns out to be good in a lot of cases. There's a lot of things that I would not know if the old-timers that were related to weren't in on it, right? They go find out shit. They tell my wife tells me, then I know what's going on in the neighborhood.
Objectification. Maverick 88. Product and service reviews.
Now, I mentioned in the previous section how I had it in my head to purchase a long-distance precision rifle, right? And that really wasn't in the scope of things. I had an idea that I had a little bit of money to throw aside, and the first thing I think of is go get a gun, right? And I had a couple of different guns in mind specifically that I want. Some of them inexpensive, some of them more expensive, you know, almost like dream guns. For example, like a Ruger Vaquero. It's an $1,100 six-shooter, right? A revolver with a 45 long Colt. I want the Ruger version of that if I'm ever going to get that style of gun, right? That's the old Colt 45, right? But I don't want the old cowboy replicants. I want the modernized Ruger variety with good reason, because you could safely carry it around with all six holes, all six shots in the cylinder full up and not worry about the hammer blasting the cap off and blowing a hole in your leg or foot or something, right? With the actual Colt 45s, when you're going to walk around with them all the time, you always got to leave a chamber in the cylinder open, just in the event that the hammer gets kicked off. You don't have to pull the trigger on those things. You just have to drop the hammer, and that'll set off the primer, right? And you don't want it to go. You don't want it to go. So I was looking at some, like a Maverick 88. I talk very much about this bottom shelf Maverick 88 shotgun I got from a company called Mossberg. I like Mossberg, and I was thinking about maybe getting an actual legitimate 500 series Mossberg shotgun, right? A really nice one, potentially like 10 round capacity, a 9+1 down the tube, pump action security gun. And I was quite serious about that. The way I wanted it, you're talking the $700, $800 range. All right, I could do that. The Vaquero, I could have done if I really wanted to. I wanted a cheaper gun, a Taurus. That's a 357 that has like seven-round cylinder. And also has an alternate cylinder where you could put a 9mm in there if you wanted to. I don't know that I ever would, right? 9mm is a pistol round, but it has a cylinder that shoots that. It would not fit perfectly down the barrel. It's a short barrel. It shouldn't be that big of a deal, but there should be a little bit of room for like pinballing action as it goes through. It should not necessarily be a straight shot. It's probably going to bounce off that barrel somewhere. There's just a little bit of room to give. It ain't that snug. The barrel doesn't get swapped out. Only the cylinder does, and they're actually different size diameter bullets when you're going from, you know, 357 to a 9mm. A 9mm is like 0.34 in diameter of an inch, I think, something like that. So it's a little bit smaller in diameter. I don't know that that's a great idea, but I do like the idea of an inexpensive, reliable 7-shot 357 mag snub nose, right? 2.5 inch for everyday carry, for easy everyday carry, right? As an option to the everyday carry subcompact 45 pistol that I have, which is not a bad way to go either, right? I would like to have the option, you know? Shit, honestly, both of those could be carried at the same time. And for like $500 or so, if I could find that. Those are very hard to find. I could get a 3-inch version of it. I don't really want that. I want the 2.5, right? Those were a couple of things that I had in mind. What ended up happening was I told my wife, well, I got a couple ideas for a gun. I got a little bit of money to piss away. And let's go gun shopping. All right. And we went down to Forney, right? It's a place that we bought her carry revolver, her everyday carry revolver that I've mentioned before, 45 ACP revolver, which is unusual. She finally got to shoot it at the range, and now she's using it, right? Which is cool. We went to the place where we purchased that from. We like that place. It's a little bit of a ride. Not that far, you know, further than we need to go look at guns. We have a Bass Pro in our town. We have Academy Sports in our town. We could head up on North Dallas Expressway, right? Highway 75, US 75, and go up through Plano. And there's a Cabela's up there and other Academy Sports, a variety of places, right, that we can go. When we drive out, we'll go up to Sherman. They got a good gun store up there attached to a pawn shop that we generally like. I don't know that we've ever actually bought a gun up there or not, but we bought some ammo and shit, right? Fairly new, you know. It's kind of COVID era gun store. They were a pawn shop that had a little section for firearms, but the firearms became so popular, they kind of like built an add-on to the building and made like their own separate but attached gun store, which is fairly sizable, right? And these are the places we generally go. There's a place called Rifle Gear out in a town called The Colony, Texas, which is a little bit west of Frisco. Gone out there once or twice. I bought a Taurus 357. I do have a Taurus 357, but it's a 4-inch barrel. It's not really an everyday concealed carry type that I could just hide in my belt. You got to put that on an actual holster. It's just a little bit too long, a little bit too clunky. But I like that just fine. I bought that out there. There's certain places that we go, right? And we really don't necessarily have to go out too far to go to like 4 or 5 different gun shops. This is Texas. You got gun shops around. Even, you know, where I work in Wiley, Texas, there's not a gun shop, but there's a pawn shop that has a decent gun section in it. Usually they have a good amount of stuff, right? I didn't know what I wanted. I just wanted to go look around, you know, and see what struck me, what struck my wife. She's a gun person too, obviously. We went where we bought her gun because we liked that place. We'd only been there once. It's pretty new. It's down in Forney, Texas, F-O-R-N-E-Y, which I jokingly call Foreskin, Texas. But I like the town. It's outside of Dallas County. It's east outside of Dallas County. I believe technically it's across the Trinity River. It's into Kaufman County, which I like. I like Kaufman County. That's where you really start getting into some country outside of DFW. You kind of cross the line. Forney is like on the edge. You might call that DFW. You might not. It's close, right? But right after Forney, there's a whole lot of nothing, right? There's a whole lot of country. And even getting into it, you go from Mesquite to Sunnyvale, and then where the Trinity River crosses, this is US 80, right? One of those highways that I like, US 80, there's not a whole lot there. It's country-ish already at that point, even if you're still in Dallas County. It's the furthest eastern reaches of Dallas County, and then you cross the river and you slide into Kaufman County, which is a country, you know. The heart of Kaufman County is Terrell, Texas, which is a cool town, right? Cool town, cool country town. A lot of places to stop off and eat. Nice long downtown strip. And I like the place. I would like to. I would not mind ending up in Kaufman County, right? It would be a pretty decent central location for any Texan to live. And it's a country lifestyle. Its proximity to Dallas is still, if you had to go to the big city for anything, it's still right there. You know, it's a half hour, if that, down the street, down the highway. It's probably not even that long. It's probably more like 15 minutes, you know. And it might not even be that long either. All right, but Forney, Texas is where this gun shop is. It's called CYA. I'm going to assume that's Cover Your Ass. But I'm not going to know that for sure, for positive, right? CIA, Guns and Ammo, CYA, Guns and Ammo. Let's get that right. Let's not screw that up. CYA, Guns and Ammo is on US 80, like I said, on the eastbound side of US 80, going right through Forney, right? Right through the busiest part of Forney. Forney is a growing town, right? When I first went to Forney, it was really a hole-in-the-wall town, and it's grown. It's got a lot of subdevelopments now, and they're building up all kinds of, you know, the box stores, the Walmarts. Everything is getting built up on Highway 80, and then there's one intersection that crosses that has a lot of these stores. But part of this whole buildup is just this one. You know, it's a mom-and-pop shop. New, large gun store. You know, it's a new style gun store. It's not pop, mom and a pop shop, like, you know, a little downtown, like antique store building, right? Like you would have in a town square. Well, it's actually this big facility that has a gun range, right? You can rent guns and go out on a gun range. And they have a very large variety of guns that you can rent, because they kind of try to emulate as best they can what they sell. And that's a selling point for going to them, right? You could go there and try the weapon first, see if you like it, and then buy it. They keep a good stock. They have a huge amount of rental options. Obviously, they got the range right there. And I do believe that they even rent out full automatic weapons for you to try if you want to piss your ammo away. And I'm not that kind of guy currently, but that's there too. It's Texas, baby. So CYA, Guns and Ammo. And I'm a fan of the place, really. And what happened is we went there, and I told the guy, this is where it's at. I got some fucking fun money. I'm thinking gun, because I'm a gun guy. And I got a couple of ideas, you know. I might want some kind of revolver. I might want some kind of pistol. Maybe something better than the subcompact that I have. If I could find something that maybe pisses out a couple of extra rounds, for example, right? That's the only thing I don't really like about my everyday pistol. It's with an extension, it's a 7+1. It ain't horrible, but I would like more if I can do it, right? Until then, it is what it is. So yeah, a revolver, I'm thinking a couple different ways with that. Like I mentioned earlier, that Taurus 357 and /9mm. I'm thinking a Ruger Vaquero. I am thinking a little bit even just a regular Colt 45, which is half the price, just to have, you know. I'm thinking these, so revolvers, and I'm thinking pistols. I mentioned shotguns before, and I did just start thinking about a longer range hunting rifle, right? I have a 270. It's a Ruger American 270, and I really love shooting that thing. I don't have the greatest scope on it. It works very well. I would like to get something that was maybe a couple of shelves higher and probably a different caliber, just to have options. So I was actually looking at a thing called a Mossberg Patriot, and I wanted to see if they had something like that there. And they didn't currently have that. They had the Mossberg shotgun I was looking at. I held it right in my hand. It wasn't the 9+1. It was an 8+1. It was gorgeous. The price was right. There it was. Take it now. And then the guy showed me a bullpup configuration semi-automatic shotgun. Now, I have one. Mine is magazine fed. This is tube fed. And the tube fed version of it is 14 rounds, right? I got 10 plus 1 in the largest magazines. And it's clunky when you have that big magazine hanging out, right? This thing, it's all compact. It's American made, I think, down in Florida. Kel-Tec, right? It is the name in semi-automatic bullpup configured shotguns. All the other ones are Turkish made. Including mine. Mine is an ATI, Turkish made, similar like the Panzer Arms and other companies that specialize in these semi-automatic guns. That thing was gorgeous, but it would make what I had obsolete. And I was just like, I don't know if I want to do that. I don't know if I see the real pressing need to do that right now. You know, I like the other Maverick 88, or not the Mossberg, the other Mossberg shotgun that I had. Ranging around the same price as a security gun. But, well, if I was going to do that, why not have the Kel-Tec, which is really maneuverable, holds more rounds? And I just started going, I don't know. When I talked to the guy about the Hunter rifle, where I could get better optics, a different caliber that I could reach out and touch something from a longer distance, he steered me into this line of precision rifles, which I didn't consider. Precision shooting has become a competitive sport big time here in Texas. I mean, as big as it is anywhere, it's big here. And there's a special line of rifles made for such a thing, right? And he handed me a Ruger Precision, is what it's called, $1,500 rifle. As soon as I put it in my hands, I fell in love with the thing, right? So that got my mind going in this whole direction of this precision shotgun. But again, I'm not about to go compete. This is a very expensive hobby. The fucking bullets are $2 a piece and up, you know, for precision shooting. You got to load them yourself. You got to get the components. You got to go somewhere and shoot, and you actually got to go to these ranges and qualify to be able to use their distance ranges, go through all this shit. I looked it up, you know. I would never be competitive about it, and it looks like more of a pain in the ass than it's worth. I could just go out to the family property and just find a strip somewhere that might be a 1,000 meters, even 700 or so, something. Anything 500 and up is long, right? It's far. But I didn't want to spend $1,500 plus tax, plus optics. Now you're well into $2,000. You're getting up by $2,500, right? And I wanted something that would be actually more practical. I wanted a hunter rifle that shot at distance with precision. I was looking for that kind of hybrid, that bridge between the two. And after leaving that store, and I just started researching it for the next day and a half, like, you know, while I was out of work on the weekend. And I finally came up with something. It turned out to be a Mossberg also. It was like the next rung up from the Mossberg Patriot Hunter Rifle. The Mossberg Precision Rifle. I don't even remember what it was. A Patriot LR or something like that, a long range. I think that's what it was. It was like $1,000, right? And then I found like $400 or $500 optics to go on it. And I was ready to go, you know? I was ready to go. And then, of course, I punted out and bought a computer instead. But anyway, all of this happened at CYA Guns and Ammo in Forney. And this is a place. This is what I'm reviewing here. It's a great place, right? You're a gun guy. You go in there. You're with gun guys. You could talk. You chit-chat. They don't get pissed off if you don't buy anything. They're not pressuring you to buy anything. They are helping you make your decisions. They enjoy spending time. Think about the gun culture, gun people. It's always an exchange. You have your experts behind the counter, but the people who have the guns, have the firearms, have knowledge that these guys don't have in some cases. I have these conversations. I learn something from them. They learn something from me. We become more knowledgeable, right? So you're never really wasting time there. It's always an education, right? Nonetheless, I feel bad about it. I took the guy's card, and I promised if I decided I was going to buy anything that he showed me there, I'm coming right back to that store to do it, right? and I'll ask for him specifically, and that's that. And I meant that. And I meant that. Of course, within a day, I found out I was going to buy something that wasn't in the store, something that's actually kind of hard to find, and I would have to order it online, right? 6.5 Creedmoor round I'm not familiar with. It's a precision round, but it will also work for hunting, the kind of game I'd expect to shoot at if I ran up on them. Hogs and deer, right? It'll work. It'll work. It's big enough for that. Very fast round, a round that really holds its speed over a long distance, better than a 308 would, all kinds of stuff. But anyway, this is about the gun store, and I recommend it to anybody within listening range, okay? Check them out. Pretty good place.
Waltz across Texas. Any and all things Lone Star State.
In keeping with my fairly recent themes of Texas icons that I picked up along the way early on when I first arrived here back in 07, 08. It was late in 07 when I got here. But mostly 2008 would be where I really got my hands-on experience with Texas going, right? And a lot of this shit's through TV, though not necessarily the case in every case so far. We've had the rattlesnake vodka guy, and we've had the bless your heart guy. Now here's another one, right? Here's another one. This one, if I remember exactly right, it was a ministry, right? A so-called church of a sort over in Plano, Texas. And I say church of a sort because it's some kind of Protestant, quote-unquote, non-denominational thing, which upon reading through its seemingly innocuous website, if you have discernment in the Christian manner of it, you can read these websites that call themselves non-denominational and read between the lines and identify exactly what kind of line of thinking, what kind of belief, what kind of subsect of Protestantism the church represents. And in this case, it's some sort of Pentecostalism. And as it is typically with Protestant churches, especially non-denominational kind, you know. The only exception, really, you're going to have in Protestantism where it's not a matter of a personality cult, a cult of personality, is going to be like what the old mainline types of Protestantism, like Anglicanism, you know, the type that have like an actual clergy rather than people who assign themselves as pastors and apostles and all these kind of things that they do, right? Prophets. And usually when you see people assign themselves as prophets and apostles, they end up being Pentecostals, right? And with those kind of assignments, there's a degree of vanity. Here's that word vanity, if you recall from the previous episode, right? Talking about a guy in the TV commercials. What struck me was the guy's vanity, and it ended up proving out in the end that he was indeed a vain person, right? And wow, that doesn't really take any kind of massive powers of discernment. It's kind of evident that people who are vain behave in a certain manner, right? And well, this is no exception. What I'm talking about here is a guy who is a quote-unquote pastor, quote-unquote apostle, quote-unquote prophet of this quote-unquote non-denominational church in Plano, which happens to be called, or at least was called, Water of Life, right? Water of Life Church. And I would know nothing of them except for two things. A, eventually I would go to another church were two people who had been in this Water of Life congregation, managed to escape. And I don't use that word lightly, right? Many who are familiar locally in DFW with the goings on of this place regarded as a cult, because that's usually what you end up getting when you have a congregation built up not around Christ, but a congregation not built up around Christ, but instead built up around a particular persona, right, that preaches Christ perhaps, but it's really about the dude himself. And that's the case here. It's the case in a lot of cases. So one way I know of this place is because I met a couple in a different church that I used to go to, who I am friendly with, right? Who managed to escape it. And the father of the guy who escaped that congregation was actually a staff member. He was very deeply involved with it all, right? And of course, I don't name names here. Of the innocent anyway, but in this case, the pastor, because he puts himself out there, is a guy named Doyle Davidson, right? Doyle Davidson. I've never met him. I don't think I want to. I don't think I want to. He doesn't come off as my kind of people. My first encounter with this situation predates my encounter with these people that I knew that got out of it, right? So I knew about this shit before I met these people. And I knew about this shit from the television, right? The television, and it must have been some kind of like cable access, some kind of local thing that I remember. I was just sitting around and just like surfing through the channels like TV watcher people do. And here's the most unusual thing, right? Now, I don't mind the sermon. In fact, back then, I'd be more inclined, because I was Protestant myself, to listen to whatever sermon came my way, with the understanding that probably 80, 90% of it is all good and right, and then you're going to have that 10 or 20% that has that little twist to it, right? That little Pentecostal twist, or that little Baptist twist, or that little Calvinist twist, or, you know, that little Adventist twist. That's where you find out the background of these people, what they believe, what they really preach in ultimately. But, you know, as long as they are just reflecting Scripture, reading Scripture to you, maybe drawing the historical backdrop, shit like that, then it's about the Bible. But then it starts to get about their personal beliefs and personal opinions and shit like that. Then you kind of get an understanding of who they really are, what they're really about. So I will listen. I will listen to a preacher preaching. But what I was seeing here was a worship service, right? Somewhere in there would be a preacher preaching. But I guess what I caught was during like a musical section of their worship service. And what it was freaky. I mean, it had that basic Christian cult freakiness about it. And I think you know what I mean. You know, it just had that scent, it had that flavor, it had that fog about it, that certain feel. I don't really know how to put it into words. It looked like what a cult ought to look like, right? Now, what you had here was music playing, right? You had this one woman on a piano in the corner, banging the fuck away at the keyboards. Ka-ding, 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 and her hands are flying up in the air, bang, 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 right? And they're playing like the same 12 bars over and over again. And you got a couple of like teenage dudes up front singing like as loud as they could push it out of their vocal cords over this loud pounding piano. And they're just repeating the same music and the same lyrics over and over and over, like for 20 fucking minutes, right? And it's a matter of group hypnosis. And I don't care what anybody's got to say about it, right? That's how these cults, whatever kind of cult it may be it Christian, be it white-collar cult, right? You may have heard me speak about a white-collar cult that I was introduced to some years back that operated on group hypnosis, right? Another non-denominational church I went to with an ex-wife of mine had a sense of that group hypnosis going on. And there's different ways that they go about managing groups like that. But one way is repetitive music, right? It becomes hypnotic. I recall from my years listening to things like Nine Inch Nails, for example, you would kind of get in some very repetitive modes and ruts, and you could feel yourself kind of getting sucked into it, right? I was never a big fan of techno, but that techno music is very much like that. The same beat, the same couple of measures over and over again. It doesn't change keys. There's not often a whole lot of the same fucking thing over and over again. And then you're dancing, right? The dancing becomes a part of it. It becomes shamanistic in a way, right? You've got this repetitive pounding music with no intervals, no changes, no nothing, right? Same pace, same everything, over and over and over again. And then you got the dancing element to it, right? That was techno. That was a club music as it was like in the 90s and shit. Same beat over and over again, and you're just throwing your arms around. You're fucking snorting up the ecstasy. And that was the scene, like the rave scene. Like, I never took part in it and shit, but I'm very familiar with it nonetheless, right? It was very prevalent back then. And, it was a part of culture. It was a subculture unto itself. This whole hypnotic thing. I mean, this is how cults operate. They get people whipped up into a frenzy. Pentecostalism in general operates on that frenziness and that kind of kinetic... what's the word I'm looking for? Contagious, right? Contagious behavior. When one person starts, quote unquote, speaking in tongues, and then they have music playing behind it, and you got some kind of pastor, preacher, dude whooping it up front, and they grab onto the emotionalism of it all, and it becomes like a contagion. And then you're caught within an environment that has social strictures that kind of demand that you play along with them, or you be what? Outcast, right? So like, this guy speaks in tongues, this guy, and everybody's got to speak in tongues sooner or later, or else you're not saved, you're not Christian, you don't have the spirit, right? That kind of shit, right? And it becomes this whole social paradigm, which is really just a matter of hypnosis and cult practice. So what I'm looking at here, right, is that music with the piano, the music with the guys singing, the same bars over and over again for 20 minutes or more. But here's what's really unusual about it, right? The dancing part. There was a dancing part. Now the seats are kind of pushed off to the side a little bit, the first couple of rows. And what you have are these women who are like middle-aged, right? Late 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, right? They've got their shoes kicked off and they are dancing around in a circle, right? Oh, there's got to be like 8, 9 of them. I don't know. It probably varies week to week. But they're there with their shoes kicked off and they're dancing like fucking pagan fucking pixies, just like through the forest, you know, their arms flailing out, kind of ballerina-ish kind of kicks with their legs, and it's all kind of free form and all over the place, and it looked like the pagan rites in a forest somewhere, right? And they're just doing this circle around with this pounding hypnotic music and all this free form, and now you've got this Doyle Davidson pastor, prophet, apostle, right, self-appointed, old dude, right, and a very peculiar guy. He's walking a straight line through this circle from the front, like the podium where the guys are up singing, towards the back where you have rows of chairs, and then back to the front. So he's doing this straight line, back and forth, through this circle of women, right? So here's the dude with the straight line, and the women with the circle. And it looks like a fuck scene, right? And this is what's crazy about it, right? So it looked weird, it looked pagan,
And then it seemed, you know, now I got that kind of artistic eye. Maybe you don't see life like that, but I see that. I see this guy making some kind of sexual dance with his congregation, him and the women. Where are the rest of the men in all this? Nowhere to be seen, right? So something really weird going on here. Something really weird. Now, I have an article, and there's a couple. You could look this guy up. There's all kinds of shit about him. He's been in and out of adversity throughout his career as an apostle and prophet in Plano. So you could read shit about him. Doyle Davidson. There's this one article. It is on, what the hell is this even called? It's just got a big D. D Magazine. Probably related to Dallas, because it's Dallas area. I'm going to just read some snippets and give you an idea about this guy, right? And there's going to be way more to it. In fact, before I even get into it, there was, and there may yet be, a forum dedicated to this guy, his church, and the people fleeing from it over the years, and the experiences that they had, and how terrible and horrible of a thing it was, right? And man, if you could find them out there, if you want, that's complete. That, you know, I mean, I read them things years ago, and it's just like, holy shit, this guy is portrayed by his own congregation as a real fucking whack job, right? And I want to read this to a point to give you just a little idea, all right, where this is at. The word, according to Doyle Davidson, this is dated June 1st, all the way back in 2006, so it's almost contemporary with my first experiences of this shit, right? Mine would be a year and a half, 2 years later, where I saw him on TV. From his Plano pulpit, he says a Jezebel spirit has infected the city and mental illness can be cured with prayer. It was the last thing this woman named Dina Schlosser needed to hear, right? And now let me just pause right there before I get into it. And the guy had been, and I don't know if he remains to be this day. He's still alive. He's like got to be in his fucking 90s or something like that. Like just about blind and toothless and possessed. You know, he just spits out Bible in utterance. You know, he utters like a fucking witch. But it's like Bible verses and shit like that just constantly. Like his mind is a record album spinning backwards, you know, but ceaselessly. And you'd have to see it for yourself. It's kind of weird. But now this whole Jezebel spirit thing, right? Jezebel was married into the kingdom of, I think it was the northern kingdom of Israel, right? With Ahab. Remember Ahab from the Moby Dick story? Well, there was a king, an Israelite king called King Ahab, who married outside of the Israelite nation, likely for political purposes, and took on this woman, the daughter of like a priest of what I call the anti-religion, ultimately, right? You know, the Canaanite fucking worship and all that kind of polytheistic, idolatrous, antichrist bedlam. And this woman was named Jezebel. You've heard this before. You don't know the story of Jezebel. You know Jezebel is a negative connotation of a woman in the general sense of it. And so it is, right? Now, she ends up being a priestess of the religion of her father, this anti-religion that I speak of. And, she's just known for all kinds of chicanery and debauchery and all kinds of evil and wicked, right? And to say that there's a Jezebel spirit is to talk about a basic antichrist, adulterous, sexually immoral woman or set of women in general, right? So what this guy is trying to say is there's a Jezebel spirit, like in Plano, the city of Plano, that the women are enveloped with this spirit of whoredom. But the truth of the matter is, as you look more and more into this guy, it becomes more and more evident that if that spirit exists at all in his life, it's in his own soul. He's a very fucked up person with a very fucked up bent on sexuality and just like the institute of marriage. And you'll see some of this shit, right? But this is what, you know, I think what I see when I look at this guy is, hey, somebody who's very vain and probably fucking narcissistic, right? And this is just an assumption. This is a guess. I don't know for a fact. But he seems to be that way. And he seems to have difficulty reconciling his attempt at faith with his corruption of sexual immorality, with his lustful thoughts, his wandering eye, and probably dark deeds, dark actions that he takes part in, right? This is what I see. And his religion, his faith, his preaching, his placement of himself as a very unique and special individual with the lofty titles of apostle and prophet, right? Self-assigned, is very likely, because it so often is, just a cover for all of the dark deeds, all the wicked, right? This is very frequently what you get. These are imposters of the faith, 9 times out of 10. I can't say for a fact with this guy. But what I observe, watching him preach, watching him interact, interviews, whatever there is, I've got this sense of a seared conscience coupled with a mind full of and knowledgeable of Scripture. It's kind of paradoxical, right? And you can impress the gullible very easily with memorized Scripture and make yourself come off as an apostle or a prophet when people don't know what an apostle and a prophet really is, what that really means. People are gullible, they're easily fooled, and then they just bend over and take your instruction and take your leadership. And it can get very crazy within the confines of a cult. I did an episode that involved Waco some time back, and it involved the whole David Koresh thing down in Waco, and a really fucked up aspect of the society of those Branch Davidians were people ponying up, dudes ponying up their wives to David Koresh, right? Their cult leader, to be his wife. The idiocy knows no bounds. People do not want to take up Jesus Christ on their own volition. People do not want to open the Bible on their own. And people do not want to learn from myriad resources, but instead want to just be told by somebody who does all the work for them. And then they get misled and they end up in these very crazy pathways, right? The word according to Doyle Davidson, like I said, from his Plano pulpit, he says a Jezebel spirit has infected the city and mental illness can be cured with prayer. It was the last thing Dina Schlosser needed to hear. God speaks to Doyle Davidson. It is a still small voice that he not only hears, but feels in his stomach. He feels it, hears it often. He heard it about 20 years ago. Again, that would make it 1986. When God told Doyle he was a prophet and an apostle and a conduit through which God himself would speak, right? That's why today when Doyle, a short fit man of 74, with full but graying hair and small eyes set behind an aquiline nose, stops mid-sermon to blurt out a misogynistic non sequitur about the corruptive influence of women, he follows it up with, "Lord, are you trying to get me assassinated today?" The congregation at Water of Life Church in Plano, where Doyle is pastor, laughs, because the faithful know these aren't Doyle's words, these are God's. And over the years, God has said all sorts of things. God told Doyle in 1981 that a Jezebel spirit ruled Plano, a spirit of witchcraft that originates in a woman and operates through her role to men, or through her rule to men. God told Doyle he prefers first name only, to inform a married woman named Lisa Staten that she was no longer married to her husband, J.R., but to Doyle.
Never mind that Doyle himself was married at the time. God's law is above that of man. The Statons have since gone into hiding. Yet Doyle has continued to write Lisa emails, sexually suggestive emails, threatening emails, loving emails, and post them on his website. This is, after all, what God told Doyle to do. God told Doyle, and tells him still, that ministries other than his teach heresy. This gets Doyle in trouble with the local religious community and nationally with the television executive who broadcasts his sermon. Doyle has been on television since 1984. Today he's seen on 5 stations in Dallas, Tulsa, Oklahoma, South Bend, Indiana, Joplin, Missouri, and Springfield, Missouri. Stations have dropped Doyle for his statements he made about other televangelists, about how, say, Kenneth Copeland isn't following a true faith. Doyle even once said a victim at Columbine, a girl shot dead for her Christian beliefs, would have lived if she had enough faith. You start to get an idea who this guy is, right? And he's got a congregation where he has it all set up, where he's right, everybody else is wrong, and if you people out there don't follow what he's saying, you're all damned and going to hell. That is red flag number one about a cult right there. And I don't mean occult, O-C-C-U-L-T. I mean a cult, right? This is a quote-unquote Christian cult. And but the Christianity is really bastardized. It's coming from the mouth of an imposter in his role. The man is not a prophet. The man is not an apostle. The man is really not a pastor in the faith, right? He's not the father figure representing Jesus Christ in any stretch of the imagination, because he's up there preaching lies. The first heresy is that he alone is right. That's not how shit works. And you're hearing it from an Orthodox Christian, right? Heresy was all meted out in the first 1,000 years of the church, the 7 ecumenical councils. That's what they dealt with, by and large. Heresy, all these different ideas coming up attached to Christianity, right? Based on Bible teaching, based on something that the actual apostles have said, or their students, the great men of the early church, you know, the first couple of generations, the early church fathers, as we know them to be, you know, they taught, they passed the word along, they attended these councils in so many cases, you know, as bishops, and a group of people would get together and decide that which is heretical and that which is not. So it's already been sorted out. This is before Christianity parted ways, you know, before Rome, the Bishop of Rome, peeled away from the apostolic church proper to go do their own thing. And that was before the Protestants peeled away from it, the Roman church, to do their own thing. And within that, everybody's peeling off of the peel-offs of the peel-offs, and so on and so on and so on, right? And the Protestantism is, by and large, a bunch of these fucking guys, right? Who feel like they got special message from God that makes them special chosen to do some special fucking role. And more often than not, it turns out that it's just some kind of fucking narcissist dude who's taken advantage of the basic gullibility, stupidity, and laziness of other people. And how far will a guy in this position of leadership take this, right? We saw last week where a guy running a mortgage company stands accused of grooming young women under his employ at the threat of firing them, at the threat of employment termination, into a life of sexual favors, you know? His personal adultery and degrading these people, and of course them accepting the terms, which I described as just another wrong. The whole situation's wrong. But in the middle of it, you've got this vain, narcissistic person
who doesn't seem to know bounds when power is put into his lap, when authority is put in his lap. And obviously, there's Doyle Davidson, and I say obviously, he's got some kind of hang-up where it comes to sexuality. Sexual immorality is wrong, but being really hung up and fucked up with it is peculiar. And like I said earlier, all it does is stink of a man's internal struggle with his own sexual impulse. And when you read about this Mrs. Staten person that he decides is no longer married to her husband, but is instead married to him, whether she likes it or not, because God said so. See, this is against what God would do. This is against God's idea of what marriage is and how to conduct oneself. That becomes some kind of adultery and all kinds of tyranny, all kinds of fucked up shit right then and there. And anybody within that congregation with any sense of what this guy is doing, which is not exactly hidden, because what's he doing? I seen him preaching on it. You could probably pull up YouTube videos from the good old days with him talking about that woman to a congregation. And when I say a congregation of people, I'm talking like six people, right? It's never a full fucking house with this dude. He's weird. And it takes a really peculiar somebody to sit there and put up with this shit, you know? I'm surprised nobody just stood up and just punched this guy in the fucking face. That's how off he is, right? So it's not a big congregation or anything like that that's going on. You know, it's not one of these mega church situations like Joel Osteen with the fucking teeth. And yeah, it's not like that at all. It's this little operation with this small set of people. But, you know, he'll go right up in front of those people and he'll talk about somebody who's not there, somebody who is or was a member of that congregation, and rail on and on about how she's a slut and how she's a whore. She's a prostitute. She's a filthy, disgusting slut. He uses these words. This is how he preaches. And he's talking to his congregation about somebody that they know. And why are they still sitting in the seats? This is a disconnect I have with humanity right here. You know what I'm saying? It's really, really fucking weird, you know. But it is a Texas thing. To this fucking day, this guy's running this ministry out of there. Like I said before, I read it maybe later in this article or other articles. And there's all kinds of other shit that's gone on. There's other things to see and discover. Other kind of adversities this guy has had to overcome. And he's really not, it's not like a growing big church, like I said. He's always manages to have this gullible handful of people. And he always manages to get integrally evolved in very weird, peculiar ways with these outlandish ideas in his head, always seemingly attached to God's personal instruction for him that is separate and apart from the way Scripture would have anybody doing anything under God's way, under God's law, right? Oh, man. It's way, way so much. Way so much. In a sense, it's like you got to see this shit. And in a sense, you probably shouldn't see this shit. I don't know really what to recommend of it, but it is a fact of life. And this guy's like the energized bunny. He just keeps going and going and going and going and going and going and going. Doesn't stop. He's got a little motor mouth. I don't even know that he's got like thoughts that are spitting out the words. They're just, like I said, he's like a tape recording that just plays over and over again, right? Just spitting out all this shit. And it's coming out in mumbles. Like I say, he's blind, toothless, and... But everybody who follows him, like, follows him. They gather around close, and he's the center of it all, right? Because that's what a narcissist needs to be. And it's just fucking crazy, you know? Just fucking weird. Ugh.
It's going to be biblical. A weekly dose of Christian perspective.
All right, this week I'm going to return back to like the original way of doing things, you know? Really, I'm just doing whatever, whenever. This is kind of what's on me. This is what I feel like doing. I want to do a single verse, right? James chapter 4, verse 4, right? The epistle of James chapter 4, verse 4 goes like this. Ye, and this is King James version, so you get that old English feel. Ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. All right. So what we're talking about here is this kind of juxtaposition involving God. This is God Almighty, the creator of all things, right? Our Father who art in heaven, the God of Abraham, the God of Moses, the God of David, the God of Jesus Christ and the apostles, right? That God, there's that God there, and then there's this thing called the, and I quote, world, right? The quote-unquote world. So what's the world? See, when we think of the word world, I think most of us think of like the entire planet Earth, right? Perhaps the entire universe as a whole. We think of the world as a place, a large place, typically the largest place, right? For humankind, our civilization, human beings, the largest place, the biggest way we could describe where we live, right? The largest unit of human life is the world, the earth itself. But in this sense, right, in James 4, verse 4, the world does not mean the entire earth as a planet. It does not mean the entire universe, right? What the world means is what I have been calling the anti-religion, right? It is the mass of humanity, right? This is actually a Bible lexicon definition of the word world. It's the mass of humanity that stands opposed to Jesus Christ. In other words, it's the anti-Christians, right? And who are the anti-Christians? Whether active in your anti-Christianity or passive in it, you default to what I call the anti-religion. Anti-Christianity is the anti-religion because the true religion is Christianity. Now, before you get all fucking fucked up about that, let me explain what Christianity actually is. All right? It's more than what you think it is. It's not that Jesus came, incarnate Christ, born of the Virgin Mary, and then a religion started with that dude going forward into time to where we stand now, right? On the calendar. Christianity goes right back to creation. The Creator God, all right? Christianity is the religion of the Creator God who made Adam and then made Eve from Adam's rib. The religion began from the beginning. Abel was killed as a result of his proper worship versus the improper worship of his brother Cain, right? And what is worship? Who performs the worship of a religion? It is the priest. That is what a priest does. He does the worship. He presents the sacrifice. He performs the rites and rituals. That's what a priest does. And that is what Abel did properly and Cain did improperly. The worship that we do, the sacrifice that we make, our priests make, indicate exactly what religion they are of, because it is the religion itself that dictates what the sacrifice may be. God Almighty, creator of all things, had a certain set standard for sacrifice. Cain knew it and Abel knew it. Abel abided by it. Cain did not. Cain's sacrifice was probably something worthy of a demon being, a spirit being, of the anti-religion. Cain would be a priest of the anti-religion, while Abel was priest of the true religion. And now you've got these two religions running parallel through the entire history of humanity to right here, right now, this day on the calendar. And they, each line of religion appears in many ways through many nations and many languages through time and space. That's simple enough, right? But this has been going on from the beginning. It's a heavy thought. So the world in that case would be everything within the worship of Cain, the sacrifice of Cain, the religion that Cain represented, right? There's a lot of people that kind of go off on this kind of racist sort of bent. You know, they talk about the seed of Cain as if it's some kind of blood thing. It's not. It's not. It will appear that way because there was not a line of Abel, because Abel got killed. Another son was born, Seth, and I would assume that he did the proper sacrifice because he stood well before God. Probably becomes the priest, and he certainly represents the line of quote-unquote good people that stand in opposition to Cain, who represents that which is evil, right? Again, from the Garden of Eden, the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and then you have a set of good and a set of evil. The good does not mean we're perfect. It means that we are oriented towards the thing of God, the things of God, that we operate in communion with God, and God works on our perfection as time goes by. That's called sanctification. It's a really fancy fucking theological word, but that's what it's all about. But we're not getting hung up in that, right? So you've got this line of Seth, this line of Cain, and naturally they're divided truly based on their religious orientation, one towards good, one towards evil. And as a result of that, they kind of congregate apart from one another, right? And they breed amongst themselves. So at that phase of time, it surely looked as though it was a quote-unquote bloodline. But it really is not a bloodline. Now, it's not a bloodline. It's not like you got certain people walking around that have like the quote-unquote serpent seed in them, which makes them like fucking reptilians. And that, I promise you, is a line of fucking horseshit, all right? That is craziness. There are people that are serpent evil, but it is really a matter of faith. It is really a matter of belief. It's a matter of affiliation with the spirit being of your choice. It's a whole lot to grab onto, but that's what's going on here. And now this explains why God would be at enmity with this thing called the world. Because God was at enmity with Cain from the beginning. God was troubled and sorrowed over the loss of Abel. He banished Cain and condemned Cain. He was no friend of Cain, and he was no friend of what would come from Cain. Progeny, yes, in blood, but more importantly, in religion, in faith, in worship. And what did Cain worship ends up being everything that we call Antichrist today, but has always been Antichrist from the beginning. Why? Because Christ is God. It's a particular expression of God. I look at it like this. As it's a third dimensional rendition of God. God, the Father, and the Holy Spirit, they are one all the time and all the time. But depending on where you are in the universe, where you are in existence, is how you perceive God to be, right? So it's not about God having all these multiple faces and shit like that. It's more so the perspective of who is looking out to God. See, now Jesus incarnate is a human being, and we can identify with that, right? We identify with that. In a sense, it's emblematic of the complete Trinity of God. It's a icon, right? In Orthodoxy and in Roman Catholicism, we use religious icons, Christian icons, the saints, etc., right? So Jesus Christ is kind of iconography, in a sense, of God the Father and the Holy Spirit. Yet at the same time, look, I don't want to get all caught up in the things of the Trinity. That's not what it's about right now, right? But the fact of the matter is God, and however you view God, you know, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, is at enmity, is enemies with the world, and the world is humanity that is at enmity with God. It is a matter of good and evil, and the world is this whole mass of everybody opposed to God. And it becomes this tumultuous sea of sin, and an entire network of connections, evil to evil. That you've heard me say this before, that the demons just kind of travel upon person to person to oppress, to influence, to bother, to pain individuals, evil or good, in their orientation, right? It's fascinating stuff, but here's what you know. If you are friendly with that which is opposed to God, you're very much in jeopardy of being opposed by God. So we got to start to focus on exactly what the world is and whatever our connections to it may be, and always make sure, first and foremost, God Almighty, Jesus Christ, is what we are about and who we are aligned with, what team we are on, where our allegiance is allotted to. Always being absolutely certain of these things. Amen. Amen.
The New Abnormal. Subject matter related to the culture war.
Sitting here in the F-150 mobile studio, getting ready for the New Abnormal segment of this week's podcast release, I've seen something that I have not seen before. Okay? Something I've not seen before. The thermometer on the automobile, right? The pickup truck's interior thermometer. I don't even know exactly where the readings are taken from here. But it has been a steady 120 degrees for 15 minutes now, right? For 15 minutes. While I'm trying to cool this car, this truck off, so I could dial the AC down to a reasonable fan speed that doesn't interfere with the quality of this recording, that 120 ain't changing. Now, actual outside temperature is 107. It is not cool outside. I would say anything 105 and up is pretty fucking hot, right? 100 to 104, Texas, August, kind of normal. It's not abnormal to exceed 105 here at all, not by any stretch. I've seen as high straight temperatures in Texas in the summertime, as high as 112, right? That's the highest I can remember seeing. That's straight 112. That's not your automobile thermometer. That's what's being reported on your weather app. That's what's being reported on your television newscast. And that's where we're at. We're at 107, and it's fixing to get up to 109. As I speak to you right now, I'm on my lunch break, taking it a little bit late. I'm in the 2 o'clock hour, right? The 2 p.m. Central Standard Time hour. And as I've explained before, if you've been paying attention, in Texas, the heat just gets hotter as the day goes on. The hottest part of the day is somewhere between 5 and 6 p.m. Right, it's not like you get up to noon and peak in temperature and then slowly dwindle back down cooler as the afternoon goes by, as the case is in the Northeast where I grew up. I know it to be that way, right? You plan your day around that sort of thing. You avoid shit in the middle of the day, right? You take a little siesta. You get away from the heat. But here, there's no getting away from it, you know, or else you just hide inside all day long. So I'll be, you know, when I clock back in, I'm going to be doing some outside work, you know, and I'd like to do this. I'm fucked up like this. I look for the hottest hot that it can get, and then I want to get my ass out into it. Why? Because when you get and keep yourself acclimated to these temperatures, you don't end up being one of these people that piss and moan about it. You move to Texas. That's what it is. This is, like I said, not abnormal. Anyhow, I don't want this to be a weather report, right? I'm trying to explain. This is not abnormal. This is the new abnormal section, right? So, okay, we can make that kind of fit, you know, with a shoehorn and a crowbar, jam it in there, but what we're really supposed to be talking about here is a culture war, right? And the culture war. And I don't really have much to go on because, you know, if you've been paying any attention these last couple of weeks, I've just not been into it. Kind of tired of it. I am no longer following politics day to day, hour to hour. I'm not doing that. I'll check in and quickly scroll through to see if there's anything fascinating going on. But what I've been seeing for the past month or so, it's more or less the same old shit. Let me give you a good example of same old shit. How many fucking times has Donald Trump been indicted, impeached, all that shit, right? It's all this lawfare going on against this guy. And especially now, as you're starting to ratchet up into this new election cycle, right? 2024 election year, the primaries have already begun and all the polling and all that shit, right? So it's actively occurring. We are in the election cycle now. And no sooner do we get into it than the Democrat Party starts to just throw a whole handful of litigation at Donald Trump and his team of lawyers, right? And it's all such obvious bullshit. Nobody even fucking cares. These people don't care. They know that they are beyond sportsmanship. They are being actual scumbag lawyers. The dictionary definition of a scumbag lawyer. That's what these fucking people are. They're a whole group of them. And they're using those means to try to hobble Donald Trump in his effort to regain the Oval Office in 2024, right? And that's not the only dirty trick these scumbags come up with. And they are—it's scumbaggery, really. It does not make me proud to be an American, right? To know that this is my America. This is the way people roll. Our politicians are not statesmen. They're not. They're politicians. They're lawyers. They're scumbags. There's no bigger scumbag in the world, generally, than a fucking dirty lawyer. And there's no bigger, dirtier lawyer than a senator, right? And then when you walk across to the other house, you've got all the House of Representatives. Half of them are want to be senators, right? This scumbaggery is just sensational. And that's what the wheels of this country are turning on right now, right? It's all the corruption that's involved, the whole mechanism of Washington, D.C. It's just a fucking horrible thing, right? And what it's all about, you know, well, not all about, but in big part, it's a public persona. It's an image thing. It's trying to vilify Donald Trump, make him out to be the bad guy in all this, which is massive gaslighting. Anybody who's older than, let's say, 30 years old, right? And a lot of you who are younger than that still, understand that Donald Trump has long been a pop culture icon, right? He's a New Yorker. He comes from, I think, Queens originally. He was always like a social elite, but not elite in the sense of like New World Order elite. He was just a very well-to-do guy, very famous in and around New York City, down the Jersey with all the casino and stuff like that, right? He's the famous American commercial property developer, and he's responsible for projects that make some of the most luxurious stuff in the West, right? Big hotels and things, you know. And But he's sort of kind of like the Rockefeller of our time. I don't mean the New World Order Rockefeller. I mean the rich guy that was sort of kind of accessible. What was it, David Rockefeller's father or grandfather, the original well-to-do, and I don't know by name. He's the guy who used to go out and hand out dimes to little kids in the street in Manhattan, right? And that dude was somewhat of a rock star for that. A dime, hell, what would a dime get you at the turn of the century or earlier in the 1800s, whenever the fuck that was, right? I mean, when I was a kid, a dime would get you like a whole candy bar, pack of baseball cards. And that was in the 70s. 70 years before that, the worth of the dollar before the scumbags really came in and blew it to pieces, right? Before the central bank came in with the Federal Reserve and all that stuff, the value of the dollar was incredible. And what a dime could get a kid back then. Oh my God. I can't even begin to tell you. Probably a steak dinner or some shit like that, right? Maybe more than that. But, you know, Donald Trump was that guy, but in the 80s, right? In the 80s, Manhattan was a real swinging place with the Studio 54 and the cocaine flying, all that shit, right? The me decade. I fucking hate the 80s, you know. I know a lot of y'all out there really love it. It's a love-hate thing. There's really no in-between. I was a hater of it. But Donald Trump was was a social icon in the 80s. And as he aged from that point forward, he remained a social icon, but his persona matured along with him, right? And he became known for a lot of the feats of generosity that he did. And these were not relegated to certain culture, certain race, certain geography, anything like that. He would stumble on a situation that needed a helping hand, and he would just show generosity with it. And I think it's in the I don't think he's building legend by it. He may. I mean, famous people, especially with a narcissistic edge to them, which no doubt Donald Trump has, right? Now, there's a degree of vanity to the guy, and there's no telling to what extremes it may be. I'm not here to tell you that he's not narcissistic or simply vain. But I never had the sense that he was doing these things for straight publicity. A lot of these things were done undercover tonight and exposed sometime later on, right? Years go by. Sadly, I don't have any examples. It's just, you know, you'd hear something about Donald Trump and that's what you'd hear. And he would appear on all these TV talk shows. And all the women loved him. You know, he was a good guy. And, you know, he got a rap as a womanizer because he always had a beautiful woman on his arm. But he was generally married to that beautiful woman. You know what I mean? There's been a couple of marriages in his life. And when you saw him with somebody, it was usually either his girlfriend, fiance, or wife. And not to say that he had three of them at a time. It's just at what phase of the relationship it was in. And he's that guy that whoever he got involved with, it was a total fucking big deal. You know, it's comparable to like a prince, like Prince Harry or whatever the fuck, in England, right? The royal family, and you've got the young bachelor, and then, oh, he's dating somebody. And everybody wants to know what it's like to, what it takes to be the girl who's involved with that ultra-rich, super-elite royalty dude, right? And this was Donald Trump. That's like the story of the guy. You know, it was almost like he was famous for his fame. He's famous for his wealth. He was not the sickliest, wealthiest dude in the country. I don't know that he was ever like listed as the richest man in the world or anything like that. But he was an accessible man of significant wealth. And he had a place at the table with the ultra wealthy. He was, in a sense, like I say, a social icon. He's definitely that. He was, in a sense, a rock star. He even got into a lot of pop culture things. He got involved with like the World Wrestling Federation. And I don't know what that was all about. There was some kind of thing. You know, currently and for the past couple of years, he's got ties to people who are involved with MMA. He likes that shit, right? He likes that. I think he was involved with like boxing because he was involved with the casinos in Atlantic City and everything. He likes the fight games. And he makes himself involved with it. He makes himself a part of it, right? Part of the spectacle. He was a very popular dude. People liked him. People loved him. And then what happened? He decides he's going to run for president, right? Oh, before he even does that, what did he do? Pop culture. He was on a TV show about being the fucking boss. And people competing for a job. And him going through their background, their resume. What was it called? The Apprentice or something like that? I don't know that I ever saw it. I think I saw a snippet of it one time and I got the general idea what was going on. The idea that he was a very... when it came to hiring practices, he would only tolerate the best of the best. And he went through pains to determine exactly who the best was, right? And he got kind of a negative reputation as a result of that. But not in a really bad way, just he's a hard man when it comes to hiring, right? To employment. He wants the best. He's long been very wealthy. He's a guy who's used to the best of everything. Right, go figure. That's how it goes. I'm used to the least of everything, and I'm content with that. Right? So he's in a different stratosphere than me. And on these things, obviously, we don't see eye to eye. And like nobody's perfect, right? But this is where, and I'm talking about myself. Right? I'm not talking about him, but he's not perfect either, right? What person is? No person is. Donald Trump decided soon thereafter that he was going to run for office, and he went in for the 2016 presidential election, and he was expected to run at the back of the pack. Nobody really thought that he would get any kind of traction in Washington, D.C. politics on this national level, having no political background at all whatsoever, right? He's just Donald Trump. He's just a dude. He wasn't an insider to what was going on. There was no real clear path for the guy. And lo and behold, he wins. Now, before he won, something significant happened, right? You would get the sense by the things that he was saying that he was crossing the established order of things in Washington, D.C., right? He was going up against people like Jeb Bush. That means the Bush family. And everybody at that point in time, is a Bush Republican. There's no such thing as MAGA. There's no such thing as patriots, right? You had Bush Republicans, which are what we know as rhinos now. They were neocons back then. And I get into all that shit, and I don't want to reiterate any of it right now. All right? That's just the way things were. That's what the Republican Party was made of. It really wasn't true conservatives. It was imposters, right? They're not exactly Democrats, but they're bent over to the Democrats. And it's all about money and power in D.C., right? And it all ends up being part of the grand plan of the New World Order. This is what Donald Trump crossed with, right? And the validation of Donald Trump during that election cycle came from none other than George Herbert Walker Bush. When Trump won the nomination for the Republican Party, George Herbert Walker Bush, who was defeated by Bill Clinton, the husband of Hillary Clinton, throws in his hat for Hillary Clinton against Donald Trump. He crosses party lines in support of a Clinton over the Republican candidate. When that happened, I knew, at least I thought I knew, in my heart of hearts, that Donald Trump was the real deal. Unless he is some kind of massive bait for really patriotic Americans, constitutionally minded people, to get absorbed into one corner of humanity somewhere where they could be dealt with in one fell swoop, then otherwise he's the real deal. And I had that sense of real deal in 2016 when George Herbert Walker Bush threw in his hat for Hillary Clinton. Now I know the New World Order is exactly what's at stake and Donald Trump is the last vestige of anything nationalistic that has some kind of power and wealth and support to stand tall against the establishment. And immediately, everybody was painting Donald Trump, because he's a billionaire, as part of the establishment. He as the representation of the establishment. How in the fuck do you see Donald Trump as the establishment when he's running against Hillary Clinton, who has been a Washington, D.C. Icon, I'll use that word again, since, what, 1992? In various roles. In the Oval Office, in the Senate, as an ambassador, right, a Secretary of State. She's always been on the scene and constantly trying to get the nomination for president. And of course, she got the nomination in 2016. And it appeared then, by all the polls that they were putting out, that she was a slam dunk, especially against Donald Trump. The vilification of Donald Trump began during the primaries, when he started standing up to the other Bush Republicans live in debates and everything like that. He started pissing people off. He got the nomination anyway, and then all the knives came out, and all the Spygate shit and all kinds of underhanded stuff, legal stuff, FBI involved maneuverings, all this fake Russia probe stuff. And this was all happening even before he becomes president. So they're coming at him with everything, and then he becomes president, and somehow they come at him with even more. And they do everything to hobble this guy, to make sure that he can't get any traction and get anything done that would foul up the timeline of the implementation of the New World Order agenda. This is what's happening in this fucking world, all right? And you're not going to be able to convince me otherwise after, what, 7 fucking years of looking at it. I never voted. I never voted in my life until George Herbert Walker W. Bush, the old Bush. Old Bush, right? The fucking, you don't know what I'm laughing at. Old Bush is like the old dead possum in the fucking old lady's panties. It's an old joke between me and a couple of other guys from back in the day, right? But the old Bush. When he said what he said, when he supported Hillary Clinton, he gave up the ghost. That was him telling me, yeah, it's time for you to vote for somebody. That somebody's going to be Donald Trump, because in your stupid lifetime, right, that is the first person running for president that's actually authentic in the fight for the betterment of this country at the level of the citizens. The uncorruptible Donald Trump. They hate him for so many reasons, but that's part of it. He don't need their money. And he's, in spite of his vanity and apparent narcissism, he's a pretty damn moral person. I mean, to the point where he is well into his 70s. He's never taken a shot of whiskey. He's never smoked a cigarette. Never taken any kind of narcotics. You look at the energy of the man, in spite of his overweight size and his age, and you wonder, where does he get it from? Well, he didn't beleaguer himself his whole life with these things that tend to take time off of our existence and quality off of the end of it, right? Cigarettes and whiskey. I mean, I did that to myself. I know what it's about. I know what it's like. I know how it goes. And I know that when I stop all that shit, and I did, and it's all behind me now, I just get healthier and healthier and healthier in appearance. My energy gets better and better and better. My outlook on life, better and better and better. Everything gets better. And this guy has lived an uncorrupted life, you know, in that regard, physically, for all these years, right? But this is what it's all about. I mean, he's being vilified now, and he has been vilified the whole way, because he is actually the real deal, because he is uncorruptible by DC standards. he gets himself into a power position where he can uncover a lot of very uncomfortable truths about a lot of very powerful people who have a lot to hide, I promise you. People who are not so moral. DC runs on the corruption. You enter into their club and remain in their club by your known corrupt acts. That'll get you a life in prison or even fucking killed if it ever came out. Between illicit money and perverse sex, possibly murders and child sacrifice, even to that fucking level of things, right? These people got shit to hide. And everything is at stake, and that is why they are going so plumb fucking crazy about Donald Trump. Which just wouldn't you like to see a United States and therefore a world that has rooted out all the corruption of their capital? Just a whole clean slate? And wouldn't you want one time in your life to experience a little era of that, a decade or two, and see what comes up of it? See what America would really be like without these corrupt DC scumbags. See, this is what Donald Trump stands to accomplish. And it really puzzles me to see so many people fighting so adamantly against it. I mean, I know the people who stand to be imprisoned or executed as a result of their crimes. Of course, they're going to be adamant about it. But just workaday Joe like me out here, a citizen who really is going to benefit from the lack of corruption in this world. Why wouldn't I be on board with this? Unless somehow I'm tied to the corruption, or I'm just gullible to anything a quote-unquote influencer would have to say, right? Some celebrity. You know, a basketball player says, Hillary, 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 so I'm all on board. I don't give it a second thought. I don't look into it for myself. And that is actually the laziness and sluggardness and ignorance of, regrettably, so many fucking people in this country. It's astonishing, right? And that's probably the heart of the problem right there. There's just enough of these ignorant fucking people who get the same vote that I get, who allow for this corruption to exist and to multiply and to hold power for so long. At some level, we are, as citizens, at fault for the condition of this shit. So, of course, at some level, we too are responsible for correcting it. But who among us is responsible? So many of us are just front runners, going along to get along, doing what's popular instead of what's right. Holding our head above water and not making any waves. In a word, pussy. A bunch of fucking pussies. No backbone. Easily led automatons. Pussy.
Thank you for tuning into Post-Arlen Monologics. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post-Arlen Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at postarlen.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@postarlen.com.